Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Soul Code Radio, where we travel through the past before we stop here in the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donso, and I'm coming back to you live tonight with part two of our special series on growing up in prison, the impact of juvenile incarceration in adult facilities. Tonight, before we get started, I want to give this dedication to Troy Davis. Troy Davis was executed on September 21st, 2011, and he was accused of killing a white cop down in Georgia, Havana, Georgia. And apparently he shot, you know, the reports were that he shot the cop in a mall parking lot, and there was like 34 witnesses for the prosecution who claimed that he was guilty. And what ended up happening is over years of him trying to prove his innocence, he always claimed that he was innocent, which is the segue of tonight, because my special guest tonight, my man Elliot Hill, he's claimed his innocence since he's been here. But he always claimed his innocence. He sat on death row for 20 years. And throughout that time, he built a defense to challenge his execution. And 7 of 9 witnesses, without him even asking, changed their statements or either recanted. And one guy, a guy named Sylvester Red Coles, he confessed to the killing, and he built international support from people like Al Sharpton, Desmond Tutu, Jimmy Carter, former President Jimmy Carter, who's actually an ex-resident of Georgia, Pope Benedict, countless others. And even with that, you know, with that level of support, the Georgia Supreme Court upheld his conviction, and on September 21st, 2011, he was killed. He was reported to have said in his last words, to the family of the victim, "I did not kill your brother, I did not kill your son, I did not kill your father," and he killed him anyway. So, rest in peace to Troy Davis, and that's what we're dedicating this show to. Tonight, we're going to pick up the conversation with my man Elliot whenever he can chime in. Elliot, you there? Okay, obviously he's not on yet, but picking up our conversation on growing up in prison. Last time I talked a little bit about the fact that when you come in here at an early age, one of the hardest things to deal with is coping with the fact that you don't have people your age around you that's thinking like you, that's able to be entertained and share some of the experiences with you. You know, you're forced to kind of have to deal with adult issues pretty fast. You know what I'm saying? And,
yes, sir.
Elliot, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. What's up, DP?
My man. Okay, I was just explaining to the people a little bit about how it is that growing up in prison, you know, we're not able to connect with people our age, but we'll bump into that later. We're going to pick right up from where we left off last time. So last time we was talking about, you know, the impact that, you know, your incarceration had on your family. So I want to start, you know, ask you a question here, man. You know, a lot of people, I talked about Troy Davis, and I know you also have claimed your innocence since you first got locked up. So I want to pose the question to you, man. Let's just say, you know, for the skeptics out there, even though, you know, I know you're guilty, you know you're guilty, but let's just pose for the skeptics. Let's say that you were guilty, okay? Would you feel like, you know, you deserve to be in prison for that type of crime?
I mean, you know, I believe in accountability and everything, but, you know, during 1995, they passed the Truth in Sentencing Act, right? And with this Truth in Citizen Act, they made that they stated that offenders will have to do 85% of their time, you know. And for real, it's like excessive sentencing. You know what I'm saying? Now, instead of doing 65% of your time, you now doing almost 100%, where at one time the system believed in redemption. Now it's like they alleviated the second chance. So even if you're guilty now, it's almost like double sentencing somebody and taking away their right to be rehabilitated, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, all right, well, that's often overlooked. A lot of people ain't hip to that. That's good information. And that leads into my next question, because, you know, being that a lot of people ain't really familiar with the system, the question I guess they would want to know is, why should they care? You know what I'm saying? Why should they care about our stories? Why should they care about the things that go on here?
I mean, you know, like right now, man, 1 in 3 people, man, will rotate throughout the penitentiary. So most likely, I mean, especially black males, most likely, man, out of 1 in 3 person, I can most likely be your brother, your son, you know what I'm saying, or your son's father. So it needs to be recognized in our community that, you know, the prison system has, you know, it has been, you know, allotted to corporations and other individuals. So they give all the excessive time that affect the black family. And affecting the black family, it removes positive role models from the community.
Oh, indeed, man. No doubt, because I know goddamn, you know, excuse my language, but I know we would be better served out there in the community right now than behind these walls. And then I'm not seeing people be rehabilitated while I'm back here, you know, unless they do it themselves. So I guess I want to ask you, like, why you think it is that guys ain't being rehabilitated? We see these dudes around us every day. Like, you know, it's a few of us who put the work in, but you know what I'm saying? What you saying, man?
Man, it honestly lead me to say, man, that this is design. It seems like the more that they take programs, the more that they take, you know, jobs, it's like they actually are trying to create a recidivism. It's like they trying to create a cycle. You know, and it starts, you know, I hate to say it, but it starts from the penal system. You know, it's like it's a pipe. The pipeline is the school system. Well, you know, they miseducate us. They put us in areas that, you know, it seemed that it guides us directly towards the penitentiary. It's no coincidence that one in three black males in a year will rotate through the system. You know what I'm saying? It can't be by accident.
Right, right. So was that your experience too? Like, you know what I'm saying? You went to messed up schools?
Of course. I'm from Portsmouth. You know, it said Portsmouth got one of the worst school systems in Virginia. You know, so the more you miseducate, you know, poor people in urban communities, it's like you directly setting them up to be a victim of the penal system. And then along with these passing the laws like the Truth in Sentencing, and laws like that, it just lead up to a massive warehousing of individuals that's warehoused in penitentiaries, and then they corporate these penitentiaries, and they sell our, you know, our workforce. They sell us to you know, to work for these private markets.
So that's what it. That's so. In a nutshell, why is it that you think prisons are secluded? Like, why they, you know what I'm saying? Why is prisons so far away from urban areas? Why are they all in these little country towns, man?
Man, I can remember a time when you had a penitentiary in Spring Street, Richmond. You had penitentiaries in Southampton, which was in black areas. But now it seems they marketing penitentiaries towards these rural areas, and they outsourcing the jobs to white communities. And also, you know, it's so exclusive because a lot of people don't know it's private markets in here. You got Keithy, you got Global Tail Link, you got JPay. These all private markets. Individuals don't know that this prison system is on the stock market, you know. So they privatize the penitentiary, and they don't want nobody to know that because money is to be made off of offenders or people who they see as being threats to society.
So that's most peace, man. You know I know it. So let's take it back to where we started with the impact of, you know, coming in prison as a juvenile. So I want to know, you know, do you know any other guys in here who came here around the same time as you who were juveniles, who grew
man,
up in here?
Man, it's unbelievable how many juveniles you see in here. And then the hardships. I mean, a person can't understand. Coming into a male facility at 16, you're not even mentally prepared, you know, persuasion, the amount of damage, you know, you run into individuals, man, that can be cold-blooded, and you being a 16-year-old, you not fully developed, you never know what your outcome can be. I hate to say it, but I've seen individuals turn into vicious criminals. I've seen individuals turn into homosexuals. I've seen individuals that's so defeated that they even attempt to commit suicide.
No doubt. And you know, I live that life too, man. When I went to Red Onion, you know, I had a dude with me, my main man, Shy. He was my dude. He ended up getting raped and turned into what we call a hell boy. For the people out there that don't know, that's what we call guys who, you know, get turned into females. We call them boys. But I bear witness to that too, man. And, you know, that's something that's really overlooked by a lot of people out there. And then for people like yourself who was innocent, let me ask you, man, how long did it take when you came in, you were 16, did you know anything about the law?
Man, I tell you this, man, I was so misguided. You know, my educational level was so low at the time, I had to redeem myself, man. So it was like a hog to the slaughter.
Yeah, exactly, man. And so basically, you've had to teach yourself whatever it is that you know as far as history, culture, law, politics. You had to teach yourself that, huh?
That's right, man. I found that through having a strong African identity that you can summon strength, man, from places you never thought you could. And that's what uplifted me and kept me going, man, the struggle of my ancestors. And it always, you know, let me know that winning is possible.
So what was the most difficult challenge for you, man, coming in here as a juvenile? What in your personal experience?
Man, Southampton Reception Center, you know, a.k.a. Gladiator School. I think, man, I think my biggest challenge, man, was actually mental, man. Preparing myself to be self-rehabilitated and preparing for, you know, a time when my freedom comes. Because a lot of people don't know, man, if they don't pay attention to the penitentiary, man, 90% of the people are returning back to the community. They either can return better or worse.
No doubt, man. No doubt. You know what I'm saying? So it's so much to cover. So now, getting back to, okay, your family, man. Now, what type of relationship do you have with your people, man? And have you been able to salvage any type of meaningful relationship, being that you've been here so long?
Man, honestly, it's like the penal system is designed to disconnect the black family, man. You know, so the friendships
and
that
you know,
I had.
A lot of people hear you say that. A lot of people, let me hold on for a second, Ali. Hold on, man, because a lot of people hear you say that. And you know, in this post-racial society, that sounds a little wild right there. So you might have to explain what you're saying right there, man.
I know, man. You know, the penal system is so designed that, you know, you become. You know, the poor class become the backbone to capitalism. So they set capitalist barriers like these phones, where at one time it cost $7 to make a phone call right down the street. So it seemed like every attempt that you made, it seemed like it was designed to make connecting families harder. And you better believe, man, that this penal system, once you do the science to the penal system and what it was used for, then you start understanding how they utilize it to disconnect the family, the black family.
I'm so glad you covered that, because I think that's one thing that's often overlooked out there is just how, in this 85% truth and sentence and error, one of the ways that this system is able to sustain itself is by disconnecting people from people in society. And so a part of doing that, man, is limiting your access. They need you to have a limited access because they need us to still get money and stuff from our families and support their companies. But as far as anything meaningful to where, you know, people start really actually needing you out there and want you out there, they don't want that. They don't want people protesting the street for our freedom. Is there anything,
that's
man,
right.
before we go, man, that you would like to add on? Or say why you got the last word.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say, man. All right, I'd like to say, remember the ancestors, man. Never forget your African identity because it's strength there. Never know that every day, always know that every day you wake up is a possibility that you can win. You know, always stay connected to the community, man, and always have love for your neighbor, man. Haru.
No trouble, man. And as always, you know, I want to know where I say that, you know,
hey.
The first step is going back to tradition, man. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Always about tradition,
Appreciate you, Elliot. We're going to do more of these, man, to the people. Support us, man. Look for Elliot Hill, man, DADOC.com. You can hit him up on JPay. You can hit me up. Check us out, man. Support. We need freedom fighters out there to support, man. All political prisoners. Free all political prisoners.